Welcome to Hustle and Motivate, presented by JokerMag.com. On this podcast, I chat with real-life underdogs in the world of sports, entertainment, and more. We focus on their mindset, how they got started, what they're up to now, and how they overcame adversity on the path to greatness. I'm here with Russell Wild, the COO of Front Office Sports. Welcome to the show, man. I'm excited to finally have you on.
Yeah, no, but excited to be here, Tyler.
Cool. So how's everything going? How's the move to New York been?
It's going. So Adam's moving from Miami to New York in the next week or so. So a lot of like finding the new office, a lot of just like switching all of our business accounts, like a lot of operational stuff. So the less fun stuff, but we're getting through.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. So for anyone listening who might not know what Front Office Sports is, give me a quick little overview of what you guys are all about.
Yeah, so we are a publication at the intersection of sports and business. So, comparison would sort of be like a digital trade publication for, the sports industry. And we cover everything from, esports to sponsorships, partnerships, what teams are doing on social, how they're marketing themselves. Basically, anything that a team, league, or agency does in the sports space, it's our goal to sort of, bubble up what people are doing in the industry and, share some light on, specific campaigns or, special projects that we find, could lead to innovation within the space and help other people out and just serve as that pulse of the industry, so to speak.
Definitely. And I'm going to take a little quick second here to plug your guys' newsletter. I love reading that every morning. It's just all really interesting stuff in there. So,
yeah. In my opinion, I think we've probably been doing it for like a year now, and it's the way that I sort of consume content. Like, I'm a big fan of, Morning Brew or The Hustle, those two, and a bunch of other newsletters. But like, just having that quick 5 to 15 minute read in the morning, that's just sort of how I like to consume content. So, in my opinion, it's my favorite thing that we do, and it's definitely sort of a big priority, I guess, for us, heading into next year.
Yeah, definitely, and obviously, you guys have had a pretty incredible run so far, but take me back to the beginning, how you guys got started. I know it was early on in college.
Yeah. So Adam White, he was a freshman at Miami, and basically he was going to, he wanted to find a way to make connection to the industry, but didn't really have time for a full time internship, balancing class and everything else he had going on. So what he did was he sort of just settled on this idea of, interviewing executives in the space, and he figured that a good way to get them on the phone rather than just have them, kind of blow him off would be to say, "Hey, I'll publish these things on my blog." And it was never remotely supposed to be a business or even anything more than really just Adam finding a way to talk to people. But he did probably a dozen over the course of his first summer that he worked on FOS, and then came back to school in the fall. That's when he kind of just put out feelers to our University of Miami Facebook group for our sports management program. Was like, "Hey, like, I got this thing, could use some help on it on social and coordinating interviews. If anybody wants to check it out or to help out, just give me a shout." And I think I was one of like two people to do so.
That is crazy to me that you were like one of two guys. So like, how many people would have seen that post?
I don't know, probably like maybe 1,000 or so. Jeez. It's not like a huge Facebook group, but like, it was from our school. So there was, a lot of people. We never met each other. I was two years older than Adam. Yeah. 2 years older. And so he, we basically went, grabbed a lunch at the Rat on campus at the University of Miami, and, haven't been able to get rid of each other ever since. But it's funny, like even today, but like in the beginning, it was basically me, Adam, and like just a few other, writers from various colleges. Like, we were all either in school or like a year out of school. And we never, like, the only communication we had was like Slack, email, and text.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, kind of crazy to think back. And I actually met one of the guys that was one of our early writers, Nick Zobel. I met him for the first time randomly at like a networking event in San Francisco.
Wow.
So like, it's funny just how many people like have contributed, you know, over the course of the last 4 or 5 years. You know, but we're still obviously trying to grow and take it from here.
Yeah, definitely. And so you guys join up, you get lunch together, and then what was your guys' plan moving forward from there?
Yeah, I don't know that we really had a plan. It was kind of like we knew, you know, for me, like I took over the social media, and it was kind of the biggest thing for me was trying to basically identify people in the industry who had some like recognition or some following, specifically on Twitter, because like everything we did was through Twitter at first. And so like, for me, it was like, all right, let me start reaching out to people who maybe they had 1,000 followers on Twitter and see if they'll do an interview. And sort of like, you know, once we got to a certain threshold, I would go, okay, let's reach out to people with like 3,000 followers. And it was almost, I guess, like an organic kind of like influencer approach where we were interviewing these people, you know, publishing their, you know, their backgrounds or their, you know, career in the space on our pages, but it would be basically like building up this credibility for ourselves. So we were effectively like leasing credibility from professionals in the space just by having their friends and colleagues read us. And, you know, eventually there was a turning point, I guess, where like the credibility was, I don't want to say it was like less on the people we featured, more on us, but like we just got to a certain point where people, you know, looked for our content and looked, you know, for the stuff that we were putting out. So that was kind of like the first, probably like year and a half, 2 years was like, I would say like year and a half, where I was just like, you know, setting up interviews for Adam, running our social, like trying to get people to engage. Cause I think a lot of times too, if you're, and I see you do it on your pages, Tyler, but like if you have a small sort of media company, like you have to interact with like bigger influencers, bigger publications. Cause like, that's how you get a name for yourself, is just like consistently being in the feeds of these people, and eventually stuff will catch on. So, that was like the first year and a half. And, yeah, I think like it was, you know, it was just cool to work on something. Like I graduated, you know, 2015 May, you know, that was, you know, what, like, I guess 8 or 9 months afterwards. And then, you know, I just kind of decided with Adam, like I continue to work on it after graduation. And, yeah, it just kind of snowballed from there, I guess.
I bet that was kind of like, was that kind of weird? Cause you know, it's not really like a big business at that point when you graduate, and Adam's still in college. So what did you do going from there, from graduation on?
Yeah, I mean, we never really saw it as a business, or at least I never did until probably like, you know, a year and a half ago at this point, I guess, just because like it didn't have to be a business, right? Like Adam was still in school. He graduated in 2017. Like until May of 2017, we were really just, you know, had this cool thing that we worked on, and it helped, you know, from my perspective, like it helped me get phone calls and responses from people from my other full-time job at Thuzio. So like it was never really a business until probably a year and a half ago. And like, we didn't, you know, like we never made a single dime in until like the 2017 calendar year, once Adam kind of graduated. You know, that, I think that's sort of what helped us too, is like, we never tried to monetize it. Like if, you know, and looking back, we never tried to monetize it too early. So that sort of just also added to our credibility in the space, and kind of helped us, you know, to grow it over time. And then, you know, once Adam graduated, like he spent a year as a GA, within the Miami Sport Administration program. And like, that was when we, you know, when he had a little more time to focus on it outside of the school and all that stuff, like that's when we sort of sat down and decided to sell advertising, sell branded content. And, you know, that allowed us to basically build up a bankroll until he officially went full time, you know, when in May or April of 2018.
Wow. So you guys spent a lot of time, you know, just kind of figuring things out on your own.
Yeah.
How did you know, like, if you were doing the right thing? Like, how did you know, like, what you were doing was right or what you were doing was wrong? Like, was it a lot of experimenting or trial and error?
I don't know. It's a hard question to answer. Like, I think we always like thought we had like a good like product as far as the coverage that we provided. But I don't. Yeah, it's like we always thought we were onto something, but we never. I guess from my personal perspective, like until we actually had like a solidified sort of like business plan or like future for like actually generating revenue, like that was probably the point when for me it was like, okay, like this is we really got something here. And I think for us too, it's like, it's not, there's other people in the space that cover the industry, but I think that our voice is different. I think that the way we cover it, the topics we cover it are a little bit different. So you know, I think we always thought that the content was special in some regard, but from the business, from, you know, actually building a business out of it, that probably came, you know, a year and a half ago or so.
And that's a lot of people talk about, is just like, you know, providing as much value as possible and like selflessly giving things until, you know, you have a big enough audience to where you could even think about making it a business.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, it's like, we're in a very sort of niche space or area. So like the sports industry is small relatively. So, you know, that probably helped us even more where we weren't building just like a general sports blog, or, you know, like you probably have a harder time than we do with that. But for us, like, because everyone knows each other in the industry, that's sort of ties back to how we were able to kind of like leverage others, the credibility of others, to build credibility for ourselves, I think. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And did you guys have like a target audience in mind, like people that work in the sports business, I guess, like in the industry?
Yeah.
Like targeting like a certain age range, or just like pretty much anyone that works in the business?
Not a particular age range. Well, I guess at the beginning we sort of saw it as like our original tagline or mantra was like, by students for students, and then we quickly kind of shed that just because we thought it could be bigger than that, and we saw that it was like, you know, even today, like 50% of the people that read us are senior manager, you know, level individuals or above within their organization, and I think it's like 25% are CEO, presidents, principals, you know, like executive level. So originally we sort of did skew younger, just I think because we were younger and that's sort of who our network was, or who our network, you know, who was in our network. But yeah, like it was, the target was, you know, always sort of like just people within the industry.
And then as far, you talk about, you know, you said the CEOs and high level executives consume your guys' content a lot. Do you think that they use it mainly to just see like what the competition is doing, or looking for new strategies for themselves, or?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of everything. You know, a big part of like for us, just that I think has helped, is we always ask people that read us and follow us, like, what do you like? What do you not like? Mm-hmm. We probably do that too much. but like from us, it's like, they always say, you know, I always hear that they use it for their own business. Well, I guess it depends on where they sit within the organization, right? Like if they're a sales guy or, you know, in business development, like they're looking at it from a lead gen perspective. I've heard that a number of times. A lot of people do just read it to sort of stay up on the trends. And, you know, I don't know that they view it as like competitors, so to speak, because like, you know, if you're working for the Chicago Bears or something, like, are you viewing what the San Diego Chargers are doing,
yeah,
you know, on Snapchat and saying like, oh, this is a competitor of ours? I don't, maybe they do. But I think it's just in general, they want to kind of get a sense of what others are doing so that way they can do it themselves. I think that's a big part of it.
Definitely. So you, going back to your guys' growth, like into an authority, and now you guys are an established authority. It was mainly from, you said, the interviews, like just building up slowly, organically through, you know, the influencer type of people.
Yeah, that's that was, Twitter was by far like the biggest sort of tool for us. You know, like I think that we were able to sort of like insert ourselves within a lot of the conversations that the industry was having, and just because that's what Twitter is great at. So that was, you know, we wouldn't even the reason that we got hooked up with our investor, Jason Stein, like, you know, that was because Adam met him on Twitter, and interacted with him on that platform. So Twitter's definitely been like by far the biggest, you know, tool, resource, whatever you want to call it, for the growth of FOS.
And let's get into that, like, you know, meeting the investors and, you know, the Steins. And just how that whole process went, like, was it kind of like a quick process? Like as far as like when you guys first started talking to them, and then, you know, how it developed.
I think it probably felt quicker than it was. So from our perspective, how we handled it, like Adam's always, he's the face of FOS. He was sort of at the front lines of that and building that relationship. And then, you know, he would, I guess, be like, from my perspective, he was the intermediary between me and them, where I would be working with Adam and then he would be like the one presenting it to them and stuff. So it, like, I think it was, you know, Adam, anybody that's met him, like, you sit with him for 15 minutes and you see how passionate and how, like, you know, driven he is at the end of the day. So, like, I think he's from, you know, an entrepreneurial perspective. Like, if you, any investor that sits down with him or any just person in the space, like, I think it's refreshing to see people that are, you know, actually passionate about their jobs. And sort of, you know, the process was, I don't know. I think it was like relatively quick, just because like we were sort of on the same page. Like Jason, he built, you know, Laundry Service and Cycle, and like for me and Adam, like he's somebody who personally I've wanted to work for since, you know, back in 2014 when I was in college and first learned about his two businesses. So it's like kind of surreal to be in the position we are. And yeah, I mean, we couldn't be more thrilled, I guess, for, you know, what's to come, you know, in the next few months here.
Yeah, what was that moment like for you guys? Like, did you guys find out together that this was happening?
I guess so. Yeah, I actually don't quite. I mean, we were like on phone calls and like meeting with him for a number of meeting with Jason and the sign team for like a few months. So I don't. It wasn't like we were always on the same page. Like it was never. There was really nothing that blindsided us or anything that, like, you know, we were worried about. Like we were always like, okay, this is going to work, because like from the moment that Adam met him in New York City. So like, you know, I don't think it was ever really like a surprise to us, just because everything sort of went well, which is probably, I mean, you know, never having gone through this process, I don't know if that's normal or not. It's probably less normal than most, but it was just, you know, kind of nice for us because we'd never done this before too. Right. So a big thing from the investment side for us was finding somebody who could provide kind of that like executive leadership, or just like somebody who's been through this, because this is not, it's not something that everybody goes through, especially, you know, I'm 25, Adam's 24. Like we've never done this before. And I think Jason and the science team were very like, they're very understanding with that. And like, it really, the whole process really felt like a, you know, quote unquote partnership or whatever you want to call it. Like there was never, you know, there's never really a moment of like, you know, surprise or like, you know, we got upset about anything. Like it was very seamless, I think, which is probably less, you know, less normal, like I said, in the investment sort of world.
So I want to talk a little bit about your guys's like mindset just coming up. Cause here at Joker Mag, we like to talk about, you know, the underdog mentality.
Yeah,
having that hunger for success when the odds are stacked against you. So did you guys kind of view yourselves, you know, your college kids, or you're fresh out of college and you're building this publication up, that you kind of view yourselves as like underdogs in the industry?
Yes. And I think we still do to a certain extent. I think less so, like we don't view like our, I think there's two sides to it, right? Like I think our content kind of speaks for itself, and like,
definitely,
you know, but then the other side of it is like, obviously there's others in the space, you know, that were sort of the young guys on the block, so to speak, or, you know, the young group and on the block. So I think like, you know, we still have that underdog mentality from the business perspective. I think not necessarily on the content, just because we've, you know, we've done it for so long and we're super, super confident in the stuff that we produce. So I think, yeah, we definitely still have that sort of underdog mentality, and you know, it's, you know, that's largely what drives, you know, Adam and myself, I think.
So if everything you've done thus so far, what's the one thing you'd say you're most proud of personally?
Yeah,
might be a little bit of a tough question, I don't know.
No, I think I mean, for what we've done as a whole, I think like the building of the Rising 25 Award, which was largely sort of Adam's conception, like, or his idea was, you know, to create an award for people in the sports industry who are under the age of 25, who don't, you know, typically don't receive recognition, typically are not on panels at conferences. And I think, you know, in the sports business industry, like, we always sort of point to, you know, the 40 under 40 or 30 under 30 awards. But, like, there are people who, you know, might only have a few years experience in the space, but they're leading their, you know, they're leading their company. Maybe they have, you know, they're a CEO, or maybe they're just really catalyzing sort of change within their organization, but nobody actually hears about it because their manager or their manager's manager is the one that tells everyone about it on a panel or conference, you know, wherever that story would be heard. So the Rising 25 Award we created, this will be, you know, the third year that we do it, basically, with which we just announced that AB InBev would be the presenting partner of that. And so, you know, basically we just created the Rising 25 almost on a whim. It was largely, you know, we held the, I think the first year, like, 7 or 8 people made the ceremony, which was actually at the University of Miami's sport management, like, conference. The second year, I think we had, like, close to 20 people show up, and then this year, hopefully everyone will be showing up, you know, to April's, you know, to April's award recipients. And so with the award, what we're doing is we're doing a 3-day sort of immersive learning experience with each of these 25 winners, where we'll go to every single, or, you know, a lot of the AB InBev partners within the sports space. So, you know, the NFL, the NBA, Yankee Stadium, the, you know, MSG, every major partner that AB has in New York, you know, we'll be sort of going there and taking these 25 students, or, you know, young professionals, through a, you know, immersive learning experience over the course of 3 days, and kind of culminating in a gala on the third day. So, we're super excited. I think, you know, not only obviously having AB on as the partner, you know, financially, but also just, like, to be able to work with a company like that and, you know, really show that the winners, like, you know, this isn't just an award where you go up and, you know, take a photo and sit back down. Like, we're taking these, you know, young professionals through a 3-day learning experience where they're going to hear from executives at every major league and team partner of AB InBev. So we're just super excited about that. And, you know, a lot of the video content that'll be coming from those few days.
Yeah. I'm excited to see all that stuff. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you had to pick, and this is another kind of tough question, what's one thing you wish you knew when you were just starting out?
It's a good question. I guess that it's all right to fuck up from time to time.
Yeah.
I think, like, even today, like, we're very, like, you know, we try to make everything perfect, but, like, just, it doesn't, you know, don't let stuff, if you screw something up, and then you go fix it, or if you screw something up and then stress yourself out for an hour about it, that's like an hour of wasted time.
Definitely.
So I think a lot of it's, like, you know, nothing's that serious at the end of the day in terms of, like, business and stuff. So it's okay to make mistakes, just learn from them and fix them, but don't sort of, like, dwell on that stuff.
Definitely.
Because I think that's where you sort of send yourself into, like, you know, getting super stressed out, or, you know, into an area where, like, you can't, you're more worried about the mistake you made than actually, you know, moving forward and, you know, getting stuff done.
That's great advice, because that's one thing I definitely learned playing sports growing up, especially baseball. Yeah. It's just such a mental game, but it applies to everything, you know, having that mental fortitude to just keep going forward even when you're messing up.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and also, like, even if you mess up, that doesn't mean that your audience or that, like, anybody else sees that mess up.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Like, you think that people, like, you know, people don't have a microscope on you. They're not analyzing every little step. So, like, you know, like, even us, like, the other day we had our site down for a few hours and, like, you know, fine, like, it happens because we were switching servers or something. So, like, you can't dwell on that stuff. You just got to kind of, like, you know, just move on and forget about it for all intents and purposes.
Man, that's so true. Like, I'm like doing little things to try to make sure everything looks perfect for my, like, our articles and stuff like that. And
yeah,
you know, I'm cutting out, like, these different athletes and stuff for their cover picture. And, like, if I mess up, like, a little hair is a little off or something like that, I think people are going to notice.
Right.
Yeah. It's just, That's great advice, just because, you know, people don't have you under a microscope. You're more critical on yourself than anyone's going to be on you. So,
totally.
So before we wrap this up, what's one piece of advice you'd give to people who, you know, might be a little hesitant to pursue their dreams, maybe struggling to overcome adversity?
Yeah, I think the easiest sort of thing to do is like just start small, right? Like if you have an idea or you have, you know, a dream or whatever the case may be, like start working on it for an hour a day, and eventually, like, you know, that hour will, you know, you'll actually start getting some, you know, getting some stuff on paper, getting your dream, you know, out of your head onto, you know, a document, or, you know, on your computer, or onto your, you know, your notebook. Just like start small, even if it's a half hour a day. Like, you can carve out a certain amount of time, you know, no matter what else you have going on, to focus on something that you really believe in, or that you really want to focus, you know, or build into something. So like start small, you know, obviously if you might have, you know, a job or something like that full time, and, you know, everyone has family, everyone, you know, goes to the gym or whatever, but like you can always carve out a little sliver of time each day to focus on whatever it is that you're passionate about. And I think if you do that, eventually, you know, eventually the pieces will come together, and you'll be able to, you know, put those thoughts into action, so to speak.
Definitely. And if you want it enough, you'll make time for it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it doesn't have to be, like, you don't have to sit down and, like, work for 10 hours on a Saturday or Sunday. Like, you can do an hour. Like, everyone has time. It's just about sort of what you, you know, how you carve out your day, or sort of, like, you know, segment, you know, certain areas into what you're passionate about, I guess.
Definitely. Well, dude, this was a lot of fun, and I'm really excited. Thanks, man. To see what you guys got cooking up for the future.
No, I appreciate it, Tyler, and thanks again for everything. Thanks for reaching out, and we'll talk soon, man.
Yeah, talk soon, buddy.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, or if you learned something new, smash that subscribe button and leave us a quick review. Hustle and Motivate is presented by JokerMag.com, the home of the underdog.